Alan Day and his sister Sandra grew up on the Lazy Bee Ranch in the remote outback of southern Arizona. They both worked side by side with the ranch hands, running cattle and managing the range. Alan and Sandra were driving a Jeep before they could reach the pedals. Alan operated the clutch and brake while Sandra did the steering. When they grew up, their lives took very divergent paths. Alan took the reins of running the family ranch, while Sandra, better known today as Sandra Day O'Connor, went on to become a Supreme Court Justice, serving from 1981 to 2005. Back in the 1990s, when I accompanied the governor of South Dakota to visit and interview Dayton Hyde at his Wild Mustang Refuge, I had no idea that it was Dayton Hyde who had talked Alan Day into starting the first federally funded Wild Mustang Refuge on his own South Dakota ranch 10 years before. Dayton Hyde, back in 1999.
About 10 or 11 years ago, I was down buying cattle in northern Nevada. Saw the government feedlots there filled with wild horses that had been captured and too old or too, so that people didn't want to adopt them. So I phoned my children and told them to take over the ranch. I was going to do something about the problem.
Alan recalls his meeting with Dayton Hyde years ago.
They're in horse prison. They're in these feedlots, and they can't roam, and that family structure doesn't work, and they're in prison, and they shouldn't be there. So it resonated with me. And so he said, the reason I want you is because you're the golden boy that has the in with the BLM. The BLM liked me. And he said, you can tell our story to the BLM, and so I need you. Unbeknownst to him, I was in escrow to buy this ranch that would turn out to be the perfect spot for them right at that time. So it was kind of serendipity that, you know, that we should meet at that point in time. And Dayton had spoken for enough land to run 300 Mustangs, but he was talking about 2,000. And I said, well, guess what, Dayton? I not only can probably help you with the BLM, but I have a ranch that will run the rest of them. And he about wet his pants. You know, I mean, he just got so excited that, you know, there was instant bonding right there. That was how we started in Las Cruces. And so I then made appointments with the BLM, and Dayton and I together went and spun our vision to the BLM, and they liked it. And there was not a downside. We offered to do it for less than half the cost that they were paying the feedlots and put them back out on beautiful range under super care, you know, good management. They said, well, we like your idea, but we don't think we have the authority to contract with you. Why don't you go to Congress and get Congress to give us the authority to contract with you? So in Dayton's interview, he said he spent 6 months back there. We spent about 8 days, and I was with him every day of it. But we did wear out a pair of boots walking the halls of Congress. And he had some contacts with the senator from Oregon and South Dakota. And then I had contacts with the two senators from Arizona, Barry Goldwater and Dennis DeConcini. So they just opened their doors to us and said, use our office as your headquarters and we'll make the appointments for you. So we made the rounds. And I mean, it was a feel-good program, you know, so everybody said, sure, we'll do that. And so they attached it as a rider to some bill that they could contract with us. That's how the whole thing started.
You actually had some BLM people or people in the industry that tried to sabotage you.
They set me up to fail on the rebid of the contract. And I want to emphasize, this book is not a beat up on the BLM book. This book is a horse book, and it talks about love of the horses. It also is a memoir, so it tells the truth. And, you know, the ending was not as loving as I wanted it to be. But they basically set me up and postponed the bid, and I drove 6 hours to Denver to turn in the bid on the exact day that the bid was to be open, and they gave me a funny look and said, oh, didn't you know that's been postponed 10 days? Oh, my goodness. And I thought, wait a minute, something's phony here. And I even said, well, I'm the one with the horses. You'd think they would have told me first. Well, we don't know why you didn't get noticed, but, you know, it's our bid is postponed. I'm standing there with 4 pounds of bid papers in my hand, and I kind of blanked out for a minute, and I didn't know what to do with them. And I said, well, can I go ahead and turn the bid in now? Huge mistake. They said, oh, yeah, you can leave the bid here and smile. I did. 10 days later, I got underbid by one penny. That is not coincidence. I'll go to my grave saying that's not coincidence.
A friend of mine said, oh, Alan Day, hell, he was riding horses before he was licked off.
That's a good cowboy term.
What I found most fascinating about your book has to do with the communication and interaction between a horse, not just a horse, but a wild horse. Yeah. And to contrast it with your old ranch hand on the Lazy Bee, yes. Tell us about that relationship between you and the horse.
Again, no short answer. I was raised up on the Lazy Bee. We had a cowboy that worked there for 55 years, and he was the toughest, most cowboy in the whole Southwest. He won a world championship rodeoing, and he was just tougher than any horse he ever got on. Really was. And I saw that growing up. And the tougher the horse is, the quicker he'd eat lunch to go out and get on one. He couldn't wait to get on one and just completely overpower them. So his method of breaking a horse was literally breaking a horse, and he was man enough to do it on any horse. And Jim, by the way, was breaking about his 200th horse at age 75, and the horse finally got the best of him, bucked him off and broke his neck, which is the way Jim would have wanted to die. But that was my master, that was my guru, that was who taught me everything, and I didn't have anybody else to compare it to because I was isolated on this ranch. So I didn't have anybody telling me, no, that's not right. So over time, I became interested in what's now called the horse whisper method, which is making friends with the horse and learning their language and gaining the respect of the horse. You know, in horses' genes, horses and dogs want to associate with man. They want to be told what to do. They don't want to be the leader. They want to be the follower. So if you can learn their language and say, I am the alpha in your life, they expect to be told what to do. And they don't need gratitude. They don't need good boys or bribes. They just literally, when they're out there in their family structure, the lead stallion makes the decisions and everybody else follows. And then the drill sergeant mare disciplines everybody if they don't follow or don't go where she wants. And that's horse structure in their family.
And there's an other level, and that excluding the outlaw horse, there's a relationship between you and your horse. And you have some touching stories about your horses and even your boxer. I love that.
Yeah.
With your dog, you live.
Yeah. Chico and the boxer. Yeah. Well, if you don't overpower them and break their will, they have personality, and each one is different. And each one will share their personality with you if you give them a chance. And so I had to unlearn everything that Jim Brister had taught me and learn that there's a different way, and in fact, a much better way. And so that was a huge growing period for me in my life.
You proved it.
Proved it 1,500 times, you know, those.
The other issue is the presumption among the wild horses is that they're totally untrainable, right?
When I went around trying to get all the information I could, I went to the wild horse gathering places in Nevada, up at Palomino Valley, and two other places, and I expressed my plan that, gee, I'd like to take these horses and become the alpha male or the alpha in their life and make friends with them. And those guys there at the training things would look at me and they'd say, well, good luck, buddy. You know, sounds like a hell of a plan, but, you know, I work with them every day and that doesn't work for me. And so I got about zero approval, you know, from trying to explain my plan. But I did have a leg up, and I had invented a cattle training program because when I got back to Lazy Bee, the cattle were wild at Lazy Bee. My dad got sick and couldn't be out with the cattle, and so there was a couple of generations of cattle that hadn't been gathered or, you know, were wild as they could be. And, of course, a traditional cowboy's answer to that is get faster horses, you know, outrun them, you know, because they're sure going to run off from you, so just get a faster horse and catch them. And after a little bit of that, I decided, well, wait a minute, let's think way out of the box here and see if we can't make friends with these cattle and not have to force them and outrun them and terrorize them, but let's make friends with them. Came up with a program to train them, and it was about 10 times more successful than I even hoped. And so I had taken this whole herd of 1,500 cows at Lazy B. And before I started, you'd take 8 or 10 cowboys with their best horses to gather a few of our pastures and maybe not get them gathered. And after I got those cattle trained, I could go out there with my 10-year-old daughter, just she and I, and we could gather the pasture and bring them in. And they never would even hit a, you know, a run or anything. They'd look at us and say, "Where do you want to go?" And we'd point them in the right direction and they'd go. Astounding. And so I thought, gee, wouldn't it work with horses? Horses are smarter than cattle, and horses are more athletic. But wouldn't a version of that program work with these horses? Astoundingly, just amazingly, it worked. Had to bring that up from here because nobody else was espousing that at all, and I mean nobody. We would put these horses in a training arena, and it happened to be 500 feet long and 150 feet wide. They couldn't get out. They couldn't jump out and run off because when we got them, they had been trained by man to be terrorized. We claim to love them. Man is their worst enemy. We're who terrorize them. We chase them with helicopters. We run them. We injure them. We split up families. The only terror that they have in their life comes from us. So the horses came to me having been trained beautifully to be terrorized by man. So I had to unlearn. We had to unteach that and say, wait a minute. This man is not your enemy. This man is your friend. I'm going to treat you right. I will tell you where to go and at what speed and to stay in a group. But I will not harass you. I will not terrorize you. I will tell you what to do and you will follow my orders. And they really want to hear that. They want guidance. And
they've tried to tell you things. The poignant moment in your book the horse tried to tell you, no, it didn't want to go in the water.
All of those are learning experiences that go into a lifetime that you either can bury it somewhere and not learn from it, or you can get humble and you can learn from it and be better because you learned. And so, that, for anybody that doesn't know, I back at Lazy B, I was trying to overpower a horse in my young life, and she had been bucking all day, and I'd get her head pulled up and get her lined out, and 100 yards down the road, she'd put her head down and go to bucking again, and she was mad, and I was mad. Came up on a lake, and I said, well, I'm mad, she's mad, I'm going to jump her in this lake, and we're going to swim a while, and she can't buck while she's in the water, and so I'm going to cool us both off. And she told me, no, I'm not going in, and I forced her in, and she couldn't swim a lick, and she drowned. And she drowned with me trying to save her, and was one of the most traumatic experiences in my younger life, you know, that... No, you don't. I was not listening to Candy, was her name. I wasn't listening. And I end the chapter talking about I did the cowboy walk of shame back to the ranch with no horse and no saddle and wet boots. And that's the cowboy walk of shame there. And I've been there and done that. You know, a lifetime of not all bad experience, but some of them that you wish had never happened, put me in a position where I could then ride in this arena, and when you first ride in the arena, and here's 50 or 100 horses, and they're just panicked, and they're at the far end, and their heads are together, and their heads are down, and they look at you with one eye, and their head goes back down. And it's just, they're frightened terribly. Soft words, never face them directly, face them obliquely, move very slowly toward them. When you get too close, they'll break and run to the other end, and you don't chase them, you don't punish them for that. You just go and approach them very slowly, very gently, with soft words at the other end. Before long, they learn, number one, there isn't anywhere they can go. But number two, this guy doesn't mean any harm to me. I can tell by the tone of his voice that he's friendly. Maybe I'll look up and actually look at him and not have my head hidden behind another horse. And maybe I won't frighten and run to the other end when he shows up. And so after, maybe 10 to 15 short training times, no more than 20 minutes at a time, they would allow me to ride in through the bunch and maybe not touch them, but be as close as I am to you guys and not panic. And I wasn't there to stab them or poke them or hurt them in any way. And it was like, okay, he's all right. So then the next thing is, and I'd have some cowboys with me, and I'd say, okay, I'm going to ride away from them, turn my butt to them, and you bring the horses behind me, and I want them to learn to follow me. on command. And so the first time that would happen, well, they'd break and run past me. But the 10th time they wouldn't, or the 12th time, you know, they'd fall in behind me, and round the arena we'd go, and into the next arena, and then back in here. Training that, if we wanted to move them to a different pasture out on the ranch, come on, boys, follow me, we're going to a new pasture, and they wouldn't run past you, they'd all get in the herd, hit an easy little gallop, and here they'd be 8 feet behind me. What a thrill that was. Imagine 1,500 horses galloping 8 feet behind you, following you to a new place. I mean, the visual on that. I mean, the actuality is 10 times as good as the visual, and the visual's fabulous. You know, and so we taught them to do that, and they did, and they never forgot it. And when a horse acknowledges you as the alpha, they have a specific language. And it's not verbal, but it's very much a language. And that specific wording is, one ear goes forward, one ear up. The head starts bobbing, they start chewing, but there's nothing that they're chewing, but their mouth is chewing, and they usually paw with one front foot. And when they do that, they're saying, I accept you. You give me the orders and I'll follow. And they never retract that. If they ever tell you that, and you see them 10 years later, they'll still honor that. Wow. And so that's a pledge given that is never retracted with horses. And what a thrill that is.
Alan Day, an absolute honor and a pleasure to spend the afternoon with you. We've all enjoyed it so much. The author of The Horse Lover, A Cowboy's Quest to Save the Wild Mustangs.
Thank you so much. Now I gotta go give a book talk.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning podcast, Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, featured on NPR.org, produced by California Central Coast affiliate station KCBX. For further information about Alan Day's new book, log on to aloveforhorses.com.
Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative.
Hawaiian Legacy Hardwoods and Four Seasons Resort invite you to sponsor a legacy tree and contribute to the biodiversity of Hawaii. Legacy trees can honor an individual, commemorate an event, or memorialize a loved one. Every tree dedication is a living legacy and a gift which grows grander year after year. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is now.
The Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative was recently awarded the prestigious Phoenix Award by the Society of American Travel Writers. HLRI was one of four recipients of the prestigious award that recognizes international organizations actively involved in conservation, preservation, beautification, and anti-pollution campaigns that further the growth and appeal of travel destinations.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show, Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a weekly featured podcast on NPR.org, produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. Our San Francisco-based associate producer is Molly Blaisdell, covering the San Francisco Bay Area, the island of Maui, and the South Pacific. Our Wisconsin-based associate producer is Julie Henning,